It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
Okay, we're joined here today with Tariq Khan out of Illinois. He's been the subject of kind of a whirlwind of controversy that's activated every single layer of the alt-light conspiracy community that's hell-bent on, you know, covering anything Antifa-related. But we're just going to be talking to him about what's been going on with the incident concerning him. If you want to see more background information, there's a statement that's been put up on Anti-Fascist News as well as the Anti-Fascist Campus Network. But we're just going to get into it here. So can you just tell us a little bit about yourself? You're an Air Force veteran. I mean, how long have you been an anarchist involved in organizing?
I've been organizing for over 15 years, ever since I got out of the military. I got involved in anti-war organizing. So, it's been a while.
Can you just talk a little bit about that? I mean, I find that pretty interesting. When did you join the armed services?
I joined right straight out of high school. Uh-huh. I think when I actually signed this. I got out back in 2000. And ever since then, I've just kind of gotten involved in social movement organizing. There's a number of military veterans who kind of, as a result of the experience of being in the military and kind of seeing it from experiencing it, sort of turned towards anti-militarist organizing. Mm-hmm. Just kind of see how it's one thing to read about theory and things like that, but it's another to experience just the total inhumanity of the military system. I think I've found that a number of the most active anti-war, anti-militarist organizers are veterans.
Yeah, so you got out before 9/11, you're saying?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I got out before all that stuff.
Did you join up for like money for college, or just because, you know, you wanted to join, or, you know, what kind of pushed you into that direction to join the armed service?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know anything. Just this teenage kid, didn't have money for college or anything like that. It's kind of like, here's something that you can do, right? You don't really have access to jobs or, you know, decent jobs or healthcare or anything like that. And, you know, the military is something that offers some of those things. So for a lot of people from working class backgrounds, you know, especially if you don't really have access to a lot of information, education about, U.S. empire and white supremacy and all of those things, you're not really trained to think critically about these things. And that's kind of, you know, a lot of working class folks who aren't necessarily bad people. They're not any better or worse than anyone else. And, you know, this is kind of, that's kind of how the military works, is it kind of preys on the working class.
You just want to talk a little bit about your process as far as getting out and becoming radicalized? I mean, what was that like? How did you get involved in social movements?
So I started reading a lot while I was stationed in South Korea. I think I read like a book by Arundhati Roy called The Cost of Living, which kind of got me thinking about international finance and these institutions like the IMF and the World Bank. That was around the time of the 1999 World Trade Organization protests in Seattle when they shut down the WTO meeting, and there was all this sort of energy coming out of that, and that sort of energy reached me all the way on a military base in South Korea. So just through reading a lot of things, through music, I was really into punk rock, and so a lot of punk bands around that time were like putting out like reading lists with their albums, so everybody was like talking about like, oh, you gotta read, you know, Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn, you know, all that kind of stuff that was like,
right.
You know, that was like the thing back then. It was through like the social movement organizing and the mobilizing of that period kind of generated all of this tremendous energy, then, you know, pushed into other fields, like into culture, into music, and then, you know, that stuff kind of reached me, and so I kind of got into, you know, I was already kind of had a lot of issues with the way the military, the way they treated people, and so then you know, reading context to understand why the military is where it is and why it's doing what it's doing. So it helps to connect the dots and gave me kind of the education that I wasn't getting, you know, that I never got from the school system.
Awesome. Well, thanks for that background. So you're part of the original anti-globalists. Part of the anti-globalization in the late 1990s and early 2000s. Yeah, it's crazy how, you know, anarchists and anti-capitalists have, you know, were against NAFTA, championing groups like the Zapatistas that were fighting back. And, you know, now those ideas or some of those talking points have kind of come around to be used by the far right, which we're going to be talking a lot about today. But I'm just curious if you can take listeners back to kind of how all this started. The incident we're going to be really talking about was in November, right?
Yeah, it was November 16th.
Right. And so, you know, you got into an altercation with some right-wing students, which kind of led to a firestorm of activity. But just take us back to that day. You know, what happened?
Yeah, so some of the student groups, you know, the kind of leftist student groups, had organized this rally for the anniversary of Trump's election. An anti-Trump rally. And so they had invited me to speak at it. I wasn't one of the organizers of it, but, you know, I told them I could show up and talk. And I talked about, the J-20 trials and talked about, how folks, tap into supporting the J-20 defendants. But all these, you know, there's this group, Turning Point USA, which is this, like, alt-right, alt-light sort of group for the purpose of kind of cleansing the city of leftist voices. And, you know, they're funded by, you know, billionaire, these right-wing billionaires. You know, there's a lot of good articles about TPUSA and sort of their shady funding from, you know, the fossil industry, from Christian fundamentalists like Foster Freeze, from all these interests that are kind of trying to stop things on university campuses, like coal divestment. You know, fossil fuel divestment has been kind of a big issue for a lot of student governments. So, you know, here at University of Illinois, at Urbana-Champaign, student government and the faculty senate have both voted for resolutions to divest from coal, something like 6 years in a row or so. I don't remember the exact number, but like repeatedly, both of like these democratic bodies in the university have voted for these divestment resolutions. And, you know, these democratic bodies don't have any actual authority to make that happen. It's the administration is who has that authority. And so even though these bodies have voted over and over for coal divestment, the university has not taken any steps toward coal divestment. But it is a symbolic victory, and sort of it changes the discourse around these things. And so the industries get really nervous about you know, the changing discourse could in time actually lead to administrations moving on these things. It could be the you know, if you do get a sympathetic administrator, then that, say, the faculty senate and the student senates have voted resolutions for coal divestment could be the thing that emboldens them to say, oh, look, you know, the university, you know, the professors and the students both want this, and so they could point. And so this is where a group like Turning Point comes along. So they can go to these billionaires and say, hey, give us a bunch of money. We're going to our people onto the student senate, and we're going to kill all these this coal divestment stuff. And so they get, you know, there's a lot of this dark money through like really kind of shady channels. There's a good piece in the New Yorker last month talked about some of like the shady funding of this organization. You know, they were started by this rich kid, Charlie Kirk, he's the son. His father was the project architect manager for Trump Tower. So he's this privileged kid who's born into the privilege, you know, born into this family that's already well connected in these right wing circles. After high school, he wanted to go to West Point, but you know, they have pretty rigorous standards at West Point, and he's pretty kind of a mediocre guy, and he didn't get accepted to West Point. And so, you know, he felt like kind of like as a white man, he's entitled to a spot at West Point. But the reason why he didn't get his spot was because a lesbian took it away from him because of affirmative action. And so that was like the narrative he went, you know, it wasn't like because of his own mediocrity. It's because, you know, there's this he was entitled to that a lesbian took away from him. And so he kind of went on this crusade to cleanse the universities of people he thought are too liberal. He himself, you know, he's never gone to college. He's never worked at a university. He has absolutely no expertise whatsoever to be talking about what goes on at universities. But that didn't him from starting this fake student group, Turning Point USA. I say fake student group. It's really an AstroTurf group that does the work of like these old billionaires. But anyway, these guys on our campus, they've been really aligned with white supremacist forces. So, like they're publicly they claim to, you know, they say we're just fiscal conservatives who advocate for conservative economic policies. That's sort of the line they give. But in terms of what they've actually been doing, it's had nothing to do with fiscal conservatism. It's had everything to do with supremacy. So, like, their main issue that they took on in the fall semester, you know, very first week of the fall semester, they were out all over the trying to get people to sign a petition to reinstate this old racist mascot that the university retired. So the university used to have this this mascot called Chief Illiniwek, which was this thing that white people made up back in the day, like back in the early 20th century. I forget the year off the top of my head right now. It was around 1920. They came up with, and the you know, native mascots were really popular around that time. And so some band director thought it would be fun to have a war chant during halftime at football games. And so he Chief Illini Wick mascot, which did some dance that came from the Boy Scouts of America, had absolutely no connection to Native peoples or Native, you know, any real Native cultures. It was just something that white people cooked up out of their own imagination. And then the university, you know, there was a movement around the 1980s. Native students and professors on campus really pushed back against this demeaning symbol. And that movement built up a lot of steam. And eventually the NCAA made a rule against having demeaning racist mascots. And so a bunch of schools had to get, you know, it wasn't just University of Illinois. A lot of universities had like these racist Native mascots. And they all got rid of their mascots, except for the University of Illinois, because these, you know, these white supremacists of Central Illinois, they hang on tight to their racist traditions, and they did not want to let go of their chief mascot. So there was a big legal fight, and the university lost and was forced to either leave the NCAA, which means the sports teams can't play in that division, or retire the mascot. So under so the administration was pretty much forced to retire this mascot back in like 2012, I think it was. This was before I was here. And the white supremacists around here have never sort of let go of it. You still see people all over town wearing the chief logo. So anyway, that was TPUSA's first campaign, was this petition to reinstate the chief. So what does that have to do with fiscal conservatism? Now, it has a lot to do with white supremacy, but it has nothing to do with fiscal conservatism. And so, you know, you can kind of see that their claim to just be these sort of ordinary fiscal conservatives is nonsense. It really is a white supremacist organization.
Right.
Even if every single member isn't white, the aims of the organization are white supremacist.
Which is just funny. I mean, if you look at the kind of activity these kind of groups do, it's like they're just like a bunch of whiny liberals that kind of do this showy kind of like spectacle-induced, you know, bullshit. Like, I think a lot of people, you know, that maybe are aware that Turning Point USA exists but, like, aren't really following them are probably aware of how they dress some guy up in a diaper. And they did this thing where it was like he wanted a safe space, and they were basically saying anybody that wants, like, quote, a safe space, or, you know, an area that is free of, you know, homophobic, racist violence is a baby. And they got a lot of blowback from that. But, I mean, it's kind of like this, you know, silly kind of shit that, like, a group like PETA would do, where it's just kind of like very spectacle-induced, you know, like this. Like, you know, bring back this made-up racist mascot. It's like, why would you do that? Like, how, the only way that's going to advance your message or, you know, your kind of team is just like in this very kind of gutter level culture war. And I mean, that's where they're really fighting, is just this idea that you know, something as basic as like, hey, this mascot isn't even based in reality, it's just kind of a racist stereotype come to life. You know, they want to fight for that. You know, it's so, right, so strange.
And they know that the university is not going to bring this mascot back. They know that the administration can't bring it back even if they wanted to. But they do this not because they think that they're going to achieve that goal, but they do it because, one, they know it's going to antagonize Native students, faculty, and staff, and it's going to antagonize anti-racist students, faculty, and staff on campus, and it's going to create this sort of hostile environment, and that's what they want. They want a hostile environment. That's sort of their modus operandi, is to provoke, and then the second anyone stands up to them, then they cry victim, and they say, oh, they... You know, these liberals attacked us just for being conservatives, right? And then, like, Fox News and Breitbart and everything picks it up, and it blows it into this whole thing of, like, there's no safe space for conservatives on campus. So here they are, like, acting like leftists who want a safe space are, right, like, a bunch of triggered babies.
We just control the White House and both parts of Congress. Like, no one likes us.
Right. That's what their strategy is to provoke. And they've been doing really shady stuff too. Like, they've been infiltrating some groups' meetings, like some of the socialist groups around town have had a Turning Point USA person will show up claiming to be a socialist, where they're trying to surveil.
Right.
And of course they get found out. They're not good at it. They've done stuff like that. And then they will show up at end of event they see as leftist. And we'll just try to intimidate everyone. So they usually they'll come and they'll always have their phones out to film people. And they'll stand right in the middle. They're so confident in their, it's the epitome of the confidence of mediocre whiteness. They just think every space and then they show up and the point is to sort of have a chilling effect. They want everyone to see we're here, we're filming you, you better watch what you say. If you say anything that's a little bit too critical of Trump, we're going to film it, we're going to attack you. This is what they do. They've been doing it a year to people all over the country. And in every case, almost, it's followed by just a bombardment of death threats and harassing emails and messages. It's getting to the point where some people have had to go into hiding. George Cicerello Maher, had to resign.
Mm-hmm.
The threats and harassment got so bad that he couldn't do his actual research. It was impossible to do his real work because he's constantly dealing with these threats.
Yeah.
And he was protected by tenure. So think about what it's like for an adjunct faculty or a grad student who's not really in a protected position at all, but is very vulnerable. And then to come under this kind of assault from the forces of the far right, it can really destroy people's careers, which is exactly what they want. That's their strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been stalking people, harassing them. All semester they'd been doing. I was at least the third person who they targeted in the fall semester.
Yeah.
They targeted a Native American woman. Same thing to her. Put a video of her online on their campus reform site. Put all the information for her workplace on there. And then people started contacting her work, trying to get her fired. They did it to a student on campus who's been really actively involved in organizing for immigrants. The same thing, video of her online, tried to get her fired, even harassed her. I watched the same guy who attacked me harassed my name at a student government meeting, on the microphone, and it got so bad he got kicked off the mic, and they were you're out of order, you can't use student government meetings to harass people that you don't like.
Right.
So I've seen them, harassing these women who I know, who are friends of mine, and know kind of how they operate, how shady they are, how all of the, their connections to, they're not just conservatives, but they're connected to those elements that we call alt-right, they have connections to. There used to be a thing on campus called the White Student Group that was attacking black students and posting their information online and sending them death threats. We know that the person who started Turning Point USA here was connected with that. We've seen their connections with the Traditionalist Workers Party.
Mm-hmm.
In Nebraska, we've seen that they've had connections with the urban soil. So they're not just alt-light. Although they operate like the alt-light, they are also very much connected to the alt-right, straight-up fascists, neo-Nazis, people like that.
Well, just like how a lot of college campuses, you're seeing a lot of crossover between the college Republicans and alt-right people. It varies, but I just wanted to bring up, there was an article that came out in December in the New Yorker where it came out that Crystal Clanton, who served until last summer as the group's national field director, it came out that she had sent text messages to other Turning Point employees saying, quote, "I hate black people, fuck them all, I hate blacks, end of story." This came out after she had already left, and of course Charlie Kirk and the rest of it just kind of brushed them aside as she doesn't work here anymore, so we can't be held responsible. But even Kirk himself, runs around and takes photos of himself doing the okay Pepe the Frog hand sign. So they're very clearly kind of feeding off of this this energy created by the alt-right and the alt-light. And people like Troy Warden, who formerly was the president of the Berklee College Republicans, who was actually voted out by people within the group because he was seen as alt-right and, as one person described, national socialist within the organization. I mean, he works for Campus Reform, which is the media wing of Turning Point USA. But I was just hoping we could kind of bring it back to what happened with your incident. How did that all go down?
Yeah, so they were doing the same thing, you know, that they always do. They show up with their, you know, and start filming everyone, pretty much just trying to intimidate people. Happened with that. But then when I was speaking, they were heckling me a lot. And at this point, like, I had never, like, talked to them, interacted with them. There's, like, there was no reason for them to know who I am. Like, I haven't really been very public. This year, because I've been just doing my dissertation work. But they already knew my name. They already knew all this stuff about me, which tells me they've been internet stalking me. I was not aware that they even knew who I was. Like, I knew who they were because I've seen them people place, and I've seen how they've attacked these people on campus. But there was really no reason for them to know who I am. So then, after I spoke, one of them made a veiled threat against my children. And so he said something along the lines of, like, "Don't you have children to look after?" Which, that's weird. Like, I didn't talk about my children. I didn't say anything about the fact that I'm a parent, that I even have children. Said nothing having to do with that at all in my talk. Out of the blue, he just comes up and, like, says, "Don't you have children to look after?" No, that is a veiled threat. He's letting me know, like, "I know who you are. I know you have children, so you better watch it." And I took it as a threat. And so then that's when I confronted him. It had nothing to do with, like, "Oh, I don't like Turning Point's politics." It was, you know, I didn't confront them as, like, a leftist who doesn't like your politics. I confront him as a parent who will not tolerate threats against my children. So that's what the confrontation was about. Like, if, you know, even in their video, I don't say anything about their politics. I'm talking about them threatening my children. And I wanted to let them know, in no uncertain terms, that under no circumstances will you threaten my children. You can criticize my politics all you want. You can criticize me. Nothing about my children is ever to come out of your mouths. And so that's what it was. And so it was verbal. I didn't hurt them. I didn't punch them, even though they said I did. I mean, even their video doesn't show me hurting them in any way. It's all verbal. I'm yelling at them. But, you know, I don't even give them a scratch. I'm not trying to physically harm them. I'm just yelling at them, basically. And then the guy who threatens my children, it's just like sticking his phone. They all kind of were just surrounding me and sticking their phones in my faces, just taunting me.
And I'm assuming, you know, if you had to, that you could get in a fight. I mean, you've had military training. I mean, if you had to throw down, I'm sure you could handle yourself, right?
I mean, yeah, if I wanted to physically harm them, they would have been physically harmed. But I didn't physically harm them. I just wanted to let them know that they will not threaten my children. And so I did not hurt them in any way whatsoever. But yeah, so then, you know, he threatens my children, and now they're around me sticking their phones in my faces. That's what they try to do, is they want to provoke you, get you mad, then film you being mad, and then Campus Reform and be like, "Look at the, you know, Antifa professor, get, you know, assaulting conservatives." So they're all sticking their phones in my face, and so I snatched his phone. You know, you don't just, like, threaten my children and then hide behind a screen smirking while you shove your phone in my face. So I just snatched his phone out of my face, and then I dropped it. And so that's, like, this thing they're making into a huge thing. Like, "Oh my God, he spiked my phone into the ground and shattered it." You know, that's not what happened at all. I did not even break his phone, but so they kind of took that video and didn't say anything about the actual context of threatening my children, they pushed this narrative of, like, Antifa professor attacks, assaults students. I think they said was arrested for assaulting students. You know, I wasn't arrested. I wasn't charged with assault. They're not concerned.
You're not a professor. You're a student.
I'm not a professor. But that narrative doesn't work, right? Like, a student verbally confronts another student who threatened his children. That's not a good narrative for the right wing outreach team.
Right. Heated discussion takes place on college campus between two people who don't agree.
Right. So, like, and it's not even about agreeing or disagreeing. It's like, he threatened my kids. So you don't threaten my kids. I don't care. Like, there's not a police officer or administrator on the face of this earth is going to protect you from me if you threaten my children. And so I verbally let him know that he will not threaten my children. And, you know, these are the most thin-skinned people on earth, as much as they, you know, like to cry about all these coddled college students who are so easily triggered and need the safe spaces. You know, how the right wing talks about the left. The reality is that these right wing guys are the most thin-skinned people. Simply me telling him not to threaten my children, whole right wing outrage campaign. And so then they start just bombarding me with death threats, just racist, Islamophobic kind of language that they're using against me, you know, based purely on my name. They assume that I'm Muslim, that means foreign, that means terrorist. You know, in spite of the fact that, you know, I'm a military veteran, unlike Charlie Kirk, who got rejected from West Point, I actually did serve in the military, but, you know, that doesn't become part of the narrative. So then they just start bombarding my department, the administration, and me with threats, demanding that, you know, how dare you let these Antifa professors are assaulting conservatives all over the university. So, you know, my department has been good about not caving into that kind of pressure. I mean, they're historians, they're smart, they could have recognized it.
Why did they not cave in? Because I think, you know, we've interviewed George Tikkurel Omar on the show twice now. And, I mean, I don't want to speak for him, but based on what he said on the show, I think that the way that his campus reacted to, like, 1,000 neo-Nazis or, you know, however many, sending them, you know, weird, insane messages is like, oh, wow, this must be somewhat legitimate because of the volume of threats. Like,
right.
Why did your university, your department, have a more level head about it, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the difference is between my department. My university did not have a level head. I'm just talking only about my department. But my department, I mean, the first messages they were getting about me were death threats. So they immediately, they're not going to think that the people sending death threats about me are like the good guys in the scenario. I mean, one of the first messages that they saw was like someone saying Bashi's symbol as their profile picture, saying we need to unite as white men in a white nation to erase this filth from the face of the earth. And so, you know, an educated historian isn't going to look at a message like that and be like, oh yeah, he has a point. But so my has been like good about not caving into that pressure. The administration, on the other hand, has been utterly spineless. They caved in immediately. They were just duped by this campaign. And they brought charges against me for violating the student code based purely on TP's hit piece that they put on campus reform. So, like, even in my hearing, the evidence that he brought against me was a video with the campus reform logo on it. And so they were completely uncritical of this narrative. And I'm now in the process of appealing their decision. So I have an appeal hearing tomorrow to deal with that. I don't know how it will go, but the administration has been nothing short of cowardly. They just fold. I mean, they didn't even put up any fight at all. They just fold immediately under the pressure.
Well, I'm curious, you know, how did this expand beyond Turning Point USA? I mean, this has, you know, been a story on Breitbart. It's been on InfoWars. It's been on Gavin McGinnis' show, the guy that runs the Proud Boys. I mean, how has this kind of spiraled beyond campus reform and Turning Point?
Right. I mean, you know, Turning Point already has those connections. As I'm saying, they really are part of the alt-right. Like, Charlie Kirk used has written for Breitbart in the past. I don't know what their connections are with the Proud Boys, but Gavin McInnes was one of the first people they reached out to spread the narrative. And I don't know what their connections are with Alex Jones, who was one of the first people to retweet the campus reform article. Former White House press secretary Anthony Scaramucci, who's like press secretary for like 10 days or something for Trump, he was tweeting about me by name, saying Tariq Khan is, he's an anarchist and a communist and blah, blah, blah. Like, it was like this really like 1950s McCarthyist
right.
type of language. And so how it got from Turning Point to those, I mean, that's kind of how it always goes. They already have those connections. And so you can see, like, in case after case on universities all over the United States, it follows the same pattern where they put it up on their campus reform sites, and then all of these guys, all these sort of celebrities of the alt-right and the alt-light retweet it. And they kind of have it down to like a routine at this point. And so then they put it out, all these guys retweet it, and then this like anonymous online troll army of neo-fascists then attack you, just bombard you with threatening messages and emails and things like that. And it's over and over they keep doing it. And so like Charlie Kirk says, we don't condone threats. We just put this up as an awareness tool. And maybe he could have gotten away with saying that, like, the first couple of times, but it's been dozens and dozens of times over and over. The exact same pattern happens. He doesn't have plausible deniability anymore. They know that when they put that campus reform story up, the person who they're writing their hit piece against is going to get death threats, several death threats. They know that. It's happened in every single time they do it, dozens and dozens of times over and over again in all these different parts of the country. So they know what they're doing, and this is their routine at this point. They really have no plausible deniability to say that they didn't intend for me to get threatened.
Yeah, I mean, this happens every time. I mean, if you want an education about like the audience that watches, Tucker Carlson's show, go on the YouTube stream and watch it. Like, look at the comments. I mean, it's just a flood of alt-right, neo-Nazi, white supremacist comments. I'm not blowing that out of proportion. I mean, literally, you can look at the look at what people are saying. I mean, it's fucking crazy. And I mean, these type of stories, I mean, that's exactly what they're going for. I mean, they want the troll army to go out and smash people. It's a lot like when, Steve Bannon said of Paul Ryan, he said, Pepe's going to stomp his ass. I mean, it's the same shit. I mean, right. They think that, those trolls who maybe publicly they're not going to associate themselves so much with, but they know that when they put that shit out on their website that those people are going to go out and send those death threats and send those emails and send those nasty phone calls. I mean, they're the ones that are going to do it, and those are the ones that are going to fight for them.
Yeah, and like some of the main organizers of TPUSA here, if you go on their Twitter feeds, they are the ones sharing happy memes. So the guy who made the veiled threat against my children, the next week he tweeted a joke about child rape. Made by the alt-right rape advocate Mike Cernovich. And if you go on his Twitter feed, it's just months and months of him retweeting the worst voices of the alt-right. And so it's not even a secret that they're part of like this army of peppy guys. They are the peppy guys. And not only are we getting the threats, but then they're showing up like the next week. All of these Turning Point USA guys show up at a meeting where my wife is at. Like, I wasn't even there at her meeting, and they're walking right through the middle of it, like, off campus. This is not on campus. My wife's not a student. She has nothing to do with the university. And they're showing up off campus at her meeting to intimidate people. And they ended up getting kicked out. The building management had to come over. I think the building management or someone called the police. The police had to kick these guys out. And so they're sending me all these death threats, and then they're showing up where my wife is, who has nothing to do with the university, to intimidate her. And then we have a university administration that is going to buy, that's going to buy their narrative that they're the victims and I'm like the bad. You know, I've never gone to where they are. I've never gone to their meetings. I've never tried to infiltrate their group or do anything to them. And yet they show up where I am, where my family is. They threaten my children. They threaten my wife. And I'm the guy in this situation, according to our spineless university administration that just caves into far right-wing pressure.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to turn now is how do you think race and Islamophobia plays into this? You mentioned just based on your name, you know, people assuming certain things or saying certain things. How did that all play into this?
Yeah, I mean, these guys are virulently racist, Islamophobic. Even some of their members who are Latino are extremely anti-black and Islamophobic, which is kind of like, you say, why would a Latino join a group like TPUSA? Well, because they share the anti-Islamophobia of all these white guys. And so that's central to their ideology. Islamophobia is central to their ideology. I mean, if you just go on like any of these guys' Twitter feeds, like the main person accusing me, the person who threatened my children, his Twitter feed is just full of Islamophobic tweets and retweets. It's kind of central to how they think about politics.
You've stated before in email that due to threats, you've been forced to remove yourself from academic spaces. Can you talk more about this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even want to go on campus. I mean, when you're just getting constant death threats, you know, that like there's events that maybe I would go to that I don't go to anymore. I've kind of had to withdraw from a lot of these kinds of things for my safety, for the safety of my family, because I know that the police aren't going to protect us. The university is not going to protect us. We're kind of on our own. And you know, that's not the case for me. I mean, in case after case all over the country, you're seeing academics are sort of having to withdraw from their own spaces. You know, academia is our space. It's not Charlie Kirk's space. And yet we're the ones having to withdraw while these administrations are eagerly giving a platform to the far right to, in the name of free speech, they are actually curtailing academic freedom.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, that's what they want. I mean, they don't want people like you to be on campus, you know? I mean, that's the irony of it. It's like you said, it's not about freedom of speech or academic freedom. It's about, you know, their side advancing a power struggle within the university itself, especially at a time when, you know, austerity and rising tuition prices across the United States are making it so the Charlie Kirks of the world are the ones that are going to be going to campuses like that. You know, the rich kids, you know, not people that are going to either saddle themselves with massive amounts of debt or, you know, who can afford to go. I mean, that's all part of what they're trying to do. But just moving forward, going to as much detail as you're comfortable, what are some of the threats, broadly speaking, about that you've been leveled against yourself? We've already kind of talked about this, but if you want to talk about any more.
Right. And so, yeah, it's been a lot of violent threats or just general harassment in terms of like mostly through email or through social media. But then, yeah, like, you know, yesterday we had some guy in a mask skulking around our yard. He was taking a picture. It looked like he was taking a picture of the license plate on my car. So we have, you know, those sorts of things. Plus, you know, them showing up to our spaces constantly. Them showing up off campus to our off campus things that we're doing. That has nothing to do with them or the universe. Showing up to film people, to surveil people. And, you know, that's kind of their modus operandi, is to intimidate us into just sort of leaving the university to them. And then they can sort of just take over everything. And then they want to turn, like, the university into, like, these bastions of far right-wing ideology.
So, you know, one thing, you know, you mentioned you were a PhD student. You know, as we've said in the beginning, you know, a lot of this is based on the idea that conservative, libertarian, or right-wing professors or students are under attack. I mean, you've been in academia going to school for a while now. I mean, what do you see? Do you see right-wing students or professors, like, being attacked for their ideas? I mean, what's your experience?
No, I have never seen that. First of all, the university is not really as leftist as the right makes it out to be. A university is not controlled by, like, Marxist professors. Any actual professor, I think, would just laugh derisively at the notion that, like, Marxist professors are, you know, running the universities. Universities are run by, are very administration heavy, and increasingly so, are becoming increasingly administration heavy. Professors and graduate students are having less and less power in the university, as higher education is sort of being controlled by these neoliberal policies. And so who runs the university? It's not leftist. Like, you know, I'm on campus where a few years back, Professor Salida got unhired because he tweeted criticisms of Israel's ethnic cleansing of people in Gaza. And that made all these, you know, the far right and all the pro-Israel people angry. And that was enough to get hired. So the native, the American Indian Studies program had hired him. And the university stepped in and said, nope, you're not hiring him. Like, you know, a couple of weeks before school started, they rescinded that. And so if Marxist professors ran the university, you can be sure that Stephen Salida would not have been unhired. You know, we know who runs the university, and it's not us. It's not the academics. It's these businessmen. It's the wealthy donors who, for the most part, have very conservative interests. So conservatives already control the university. The amount of space that, you know, those of us on who are more to the left have is very small and is shrinking. And this notion that Marxist professors are, you know, are taking over the university and are persecuting conservatives is just utter nonsense.
Right. I mean, you know, as you said before, it's, I mean, these places are businesses. You know, these people are making money off of tuition and student fees and selling books and people living on the university, and more universities are being streamlined into a business model. I mean, you know, these are not places where just somebody can go and, you know, you can get free tuition and just, you know, learn about, you know, Marxism or something, or, you know, be in some sort of communal atmosphere. I mean, these are businesses that are, you know, turning out people and making money off of people going to school. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of liberals and a fair amount of Marxists that teach on campus, but to somehow, you know, say that they are somehow involved in, like, organizing, I think is really silly. And also, I mean, there's also a fair amount of, you know, right-wing and conservative and libertarian professors and speakers as well. I mean, there's also historically been, you know, certain departments that have swung one way while another one has swung another way. I mean, a lot of people have pointed out that, you know, sociology will be very liberal or left-wing, and, you know, political science will be very right.
Right. I mean, I have an undergraduate degree, a master's degree, and now I'm, you know, near, you know, in my fifth year now of my PhD program. And in all of those years on different university campuses, I've had maybe two, maybe three at most professors that I would say are on the radical left. Most professors are not radicals. I wish most professors, you know, the university was this like bastion of emancipatory ideology, the way that the conservatives think it is. It's not that. And I certainly have not experienced that. I would say most professors I've had, even in the humanities and social sciences, have been frustratingly centrist in the politics.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of this for a lot of professors is just, you know, a way to, you know, analyze the world and write about it. I mean, professors have to turn out massive amounts of papers and books, and I mean, if Marxism is one way to do that, and I don't know. But I think, like, this, again, to kind of go back to kind of the myth and the spectacle that these people want to create, that there's a shadowy underbelly that's somehow connected either to the Democratic Party or to, you know, social movements that's running universities and turning them into, you know, Antifa terrorists is just, I mean, it's hilarious, but, you know, I mean, that's the kind of myth they want to create.
Right, and it's a myth that keeps billionaires giving them the funding. This is how TPUSA gets their funding,
right?
From these billionaires, keep pushing this narrative. They got to keep showing how the university is so intolerant of conservatives, and then, you know, you just keep making these sensational videos for campus reform that are cut off from the context, and then you just keep people, you know, keep all these rich conservatives outraged, and they'll keep on funding you.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And there, like you mentioned before, there's lots of articles that talk about, you know, who funds groups like Turning Point USA. Another organization to look into is Young Americans for Liberty, you know, again, financed largely by wealthy backers. You know, they're the ones that are paying for people like Ann Coulter or Ben Shapiro to come out on campus. And they, too, have ties at times to people within the alt-right.
Speaking of funding, our governor, the governor of our state, Bruce Rauner, he donated his charitable foundation, the Rauner Foundation, donated $100,000 to TPUSA in 2014. So they definitely, you know, they have these ties to people who run the state. And I don't know how it's charity to give money to TPUSA, but that's what Governor Bruce Rauner of Illinois did.
Damn. All right, we'll just wrap up here. How can people support and help you?
If folks write in to the Dean of Students, Justin Brown, who I'm appealing my case to, and let them know that this narrative TPUSA has basically let him know that he's been duped by a right-wing outrage campaign, and that he needs to drop, you know, dismiss all charges against me, apologize to my children who they have failed to protect, and apologize to the university community for letting this nonsense happen. So send an email to a respectful but firm email to Dean of Students Justin Brown, demanding that they back off of me. This is unjust, and we shouldn't stand for it.
Yeah, totally. And we'll have links in the show notes to how to do just that. But for people listening, last question: if you had to give any advice for those that were in a similar situation, what advice would you give? Either somebody like yourself that's a student or somebody that's a professor. I mean, what would you tell somebody that's kind of, suddenly becomes the center of an InfoWars or Tucker Carlson article or piece?
Yeah, I would say connect with, first of all, don't be silent about it. That was a mistake I made. So I felt like, no, I'll just kind of let this blow over. I can talk to the administration. They'll understand. That was a mistake. Don't be silent about it. Connect with other folks. If you have a faculty union, connect with the American Association of University Professors, with the Campus Anti-Fascist Network. I have at my school, we have a labor union for graduate students. They got my back immediately. But don't be silent about it. Don't just keep your head down and hope it blows over. Because if you do that, then the only narrative that's going to be out there is the far right's narrative. And they are successful at forcing university administrations to bend to their will. So don't be silent about it. Unite with other folks, other organizations that are dealing with this kind of thing, and fight back.
Hey, thanks so much for coming on. And I encourage people, if they are in a similar situation, first of all, try to get support. Also, just don't let this shit get you down, because these people are just, they'll move on in a week, generally. But just have those support networks and strength in place and ready to go. And thanks so much for coming on and sharing your side of the story.
Yeah, thank you.